information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Appear to border
and it
on
shows.
Defense.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not go on with it, made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Well, ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all going to die. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 136 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster. It's August 14th, 2009. Here are the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Woodstock, Les Paul, Red Dawn remake, and a new Brave World. Mission Mind Control, carriers in pandemic prep, GMOs in the food world order, Econo Health, Metro Mayhem, Barracks and Burgers, more Air Force One fallout, Obamasiyah's North American Union, and the Town Hall health scare, police state drills and updates, Fabric Virgo, Badger Denial, and Reliant Mermaid, plus Google's opt-out village. All that, so much more. August 14th, 2009, it's episode 136 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Well, come on, all of you big, strong men. Uncle Sam needs your help again. Got himself in a terrible jam way down yonder in Vietnam. Put down your books and pick up a gun. We're gonna have a whole lot of fun. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, there ain't no time to wonder why. Woo-hoo, we're all gonna die. Now come on, Wall Street, don't be slow. Why, man, this is war, a go-go. There's plenty of good money to be made. Supplying the army with the tools of the trade. Just hope and pray that if they drop the bomb, we're dropping on a Viet Cong. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, ain't no time to wonder why. Whoopee, we're all gonna die. Now come on, generals, let's move fast. Your big chance is here at last. Now you can go out and get those reds. Cause the only good commie is one that's dead. And you know that peace can only be won when we've blown them all the kingdom come. Sing it! One, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, don't give a damn. Louder! Vietnam. Open up the early gates. Well, listen, people, I don't know how you expect to ever stop the war if you can't sing any better than that. There's about 300,000 of you fuckers out there. I want you to start singing. Come on. And it's one, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven. Open up the pearly gates. Well, I ain't no time to wonder why. Woo! I'm dying. Now, come on, mother, it's about the land. Pack your boys off to Vietnam. Come on, fathers, don't hesitate. And send your sons off before it's too late. Be the first one on your block. Have your boys come on the glass. All right! One, two, three. What are we fighting for? Don't ask me, I don't give a damn. The next stop is Vietnam. And it's five, six, seven.
Oh, the more things change, the more they stay the same, my friends. That was 40 years ago this weekend.
you know, singing about wars for conquest, Wall Street banksters. You know, that was a long time ago. That doesn't mean anything today. Or does it? It does. And that's why you're here, and that's why I'm here. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. This is episode 136. It's August 14th, 2009. Coming to you live, as always, every Friday morning from the mothership of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Live Friday mornings at 10 a.m. Pacific Time. And thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com, 92.3 FM in Casper, Wyoming, rebroadcasting the show. RevereRadio.net, it's 1 p.m. on the East Coast. All simulcasting, MediaMonarchy.com. And again, huge thanks to 98.5 Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org. BoulderFreeRadio.com, 93.9 KBFR. Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, 87.9. And from right here, CascadiaPublicRadio.org. And you know how to get in touch with me if they're not under some denial of service attack. FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. So here we are, another week, another insane batch of news that it will be a miracle if I can get through all of this in one mere two-hour show. Had a birthday this last Tuesday, so I kind of took a couple steps back from the page and did most of my prep work in the last 36 hours. So it's a Seat of the Pants episode for 136, but again, so much to go over. And we see just at top of the news, we'll get to Woodstock in just a second. We glance at Google News right now, the update we hit last week. Lynette Squeaky Frome has now been released from prison. It all kind of ties together. Again, the more things change. Lynette Squeaky Frome was released from federal custody today, August 14th, 2009. She was convicted in 75 of pointing a gun at Jerry the Jerk in Sacramento. She was released this morning from the Federal Medical Center Carswell in Fort Worth, Texas. I seem to recall, and I haven't looked it up, but I remember as a little kid being in West Virginia, that she was in prison somewhere around or within West Virginia. It was probably at the Alderson Women's Prison, but she escaped. And I remember as a little kid, my parents kind of jokingly, kind of seriously, oh, the crazy Manson family woman's escaped from prison. And I remember as a little kid going, oh my God. I should remind you, as I glance at it myself, not only Google News, but also the chat room that's up on ZeroPointRadio.com. Can kind of pop in there here and there for little info bites, changing the lyrics to our opening song. The next stop is Afghanirak, and it's 1, 2, 3, what are we fighting for? So Woodstock gave peace a chance, and now look at the change, my friends. Let's hit an op-ed piece from Leonard Pitts Jr. that ran in McClatchy News Service. On Saturday, that's tomorrow, the 15th, it'll be 40 years since 400,000 hippies descended on Maxie Asger's dairy farm for a concert. Jimi Hendrix performed, as did Richie Havens, The Who, Janis Joplin, Joe Cocker, John Baez, Santana, Sly and the Family Stone, and tons more. It was billed as 3 days of peace and music, and it became a generational signpost. Woodstock. 40 years later, a faint patina of absurdity attaches to those days. One watches archival footage of young people groping and grooving and getting stoned in the mud with the same faintly horrified fascination one watches young people of earlier years dancing the jitterbug or swallowing goldfish. It seems quaint, something foolish and long ago. And it comes as no surprise that one of former Vietnam POW John McCain's most memorable applause lines during the last presidential campaign was that he missed Woodstock because he was tied up at the time. It's a wisecrack that neatly encapsulates the culture wars. Feckless hippies turning on and tuning in versus a Navy flyer doing his duty under duress for flag and country. which is not to buy into the inferred argument that there was no meeting in those mud-splattered days. Woodstock was the distillation of an idea which held that avarice could be stilled, hatred could be silenced, and the disparate tribes of humanity could find reconciliation in the chords of a song. It was a common belief back then, and it's hardly coincidental that Coca-Cola came out 2 years later with the iconic commercial in which a multi-ethnic chorus declares, "I'd like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony." The idea that you could play your way to peace or harmonize your way to love did not end when the hippies left Yasgur's farm. It resurfaces every time a roster of performers gathers for some planet-wide concert to heal African famine, global warming, the American farmer. For that matter, the idea wasn't born on Yasgur's farm either. History records an episode on Christmas Eve of 1914 when German soldiers faced off against entrenched French, Belgian, and English troops. The Germans set tiny Christmas trees and lighted candles upon the parapets of their trenches and began singing carols. Before long, Allied troops had crawled cautiously out of their holes to watch and listen. Shortly after that, they joined in the singing. There followed an unofficial truth. Or rather, truce. Enemies sang together, played soccer, exchanged small gifts, buried their dead. For much of the week between Christmas and New Year's, music stopped the war. But if the idea was neither born nor died on Yasgur's farm, it nevertheless reached arguably its fullest expression there. Granted, Woodstock did not stop the war in Vietnam, even for a week. Indeed, young people left the farm, cut their hair, put on suits and ties, pants suits and sensible shoes, and became doctors, cops, TV executives, mothers, fathers, respectable and responsible. 4 decades later, they are retirees, dandling grandchildren on arthritic knees and eligible for the senior discount at Denny's. They've joined the world they famously opted out of. But before they did, they authored what amounts to a statement of faith in the power of all of us, we, singing harmony and getting by with a little help from our friends. Granted, it's a statement strikingly out of key in an era where music is more often associated with product placement than division healing. More to the point, it is a statement that bespeaks hapless youth and hopeless naivete. Who among us is still young enough to think you can sing peace into being? But 40 years ago, some of us gave it a try. Absurd? Maybe. But as generational signposts go, you could do a whole lot worse. I'm sure I could have found probably better op-ed pieces, but that one really, that hit the high and the low points for me, and it was a nice broad brushstroke. Because again, I feel like I grew up and looked at that and looked at the 60s and said, well, what did you guys all sold out? And we don't have protest music for our own generation. That's why I got to play a 40-year-old Country Joe song at the top of the show. The last big wave of protest music came out of the Indian alternative scene right around Gulf War II and the lead up to Bush's re-election. But where is all that stuff? Where's Zach De La Rocha, Rage Against the Machine? Where's Jello Biafra? Where are these guys, you know, when you need them most? It's mentioned in the movie Jarhead when they start to play some 60s tune while they're out dancing around in the sand in Iraq. Can't we have our own protest music? I think sadly maybe the question is, or rather the answer to that question is no. We do have a lot of media and memes to get through before we get to the really ugly news about quarantines and drills and the like. Guitar legend and inventor Les Paul has died at the age of 94. This is from the Associated Press. Les Paul, who pioneered the solid body electric guitar, later wielded by a legion of rock and roll greats, died yesterday of complications from pneumonia. He was 94. According to Gibson Guitar, Paul died at White Plains Hospital. His family and friends were by his side. As an inventor, Les Paul also helped bring about the rise of rock and roll with multi-track recording, which enables artists to record different instruments at different times, sing harmony with themselves, and then carefully balance the tracks in the finished recording.
The inventor of the electric guitar, is dead. Les Paul passed away Thursday at a hospital in White Plains, New York, from complications related to pneumonia. He was 94. A tinkerer and musician since childhood, he experimented with guitar amplification for years before coming up in 1941 with what he called the log, a 4x4 piece of wood strung with steel strings. In 1952, Gibson Guitars began production of the Les Paul guitar. Led Zeppelin's Jimmy Page and Pete Townsend of The Who were among the performers who made it their trademark string. Over the years, the Les Paul series became the most popular in the music industry. In 2005, Christie's Auction House sold a 1955 Gibson Les Paul for more than $45,000. Diane Kepley, The Associated Press.
You know, you could almost make the argument that the invention of multi-track recording is far, far, far more important than the invention of the electric guitar, but we're not going to get into that right now. From Les Paul to Red Dawn. We first hit this story back in July of 2008 when MGM announced they were going to remake Red Dawn for a post-9/11 world. Now, the Red Dawn remake is going to start shooting in Michigan on September 8th, and with a really excited report from WXYZ.
It's going to be huge. Michigan has lured some impressive projects since passing the film incentives last year. Gran Torino, Whip It, Betty Ann Water. But it appears the state's biggest catch to date is the remake of Red Dawn.
Wolverine!
The memorable battle cry will soon be echoing across Michigan's landscape. Red Dawn tells the gripping story of how some Midwestern teenagers fight to save their hometown from a foreign invasion. MGM's 1984 hit starred Patrick Swayze, Charlie Sheen, C. Thomas Howell, Leah Thompson, and Jennifer Grey. The cast for the remake includes Chris Hemsworth, who played George Kirk in the latest Star Trek movie. He'll take on Swayze's role of Jed Eckert, the group's unofficial leader. Eckert's hot-headed younger brother, Matt, originally played by Sheen, will be brought back by Josh Peck, best known for the voice of Eddie in the Ice Age movie. And Adrian Palicki from the Friday Night Lights TV series will portray Tony, the scrappy character Jennifer Grey first played. Dan Bradley will direct. He was the second unit director on the Bourne Ultimatum and the Bourne Supremacy films.
We're thrilled.
Ken Droz from the Michigan Film Office says the state's incentives lured MGM here, so did the setting.
They need forests, they need hills, or mountainous ranges. So they'll look at the UP, they'll look at the northern part of the Lower Peninsula.
How big of a budget are we talking about here?
It's a sizable budget. Think about a film that we'll be shooting here for like 13, 14 weeks.
$50 million?
That's a good ballpark.
Anybody here made their own films at home?
And area production companies and filmmakers are already feeling the ripple effect of Red Dawn's pre-production here.
A lot of the folks we normally hire are now committed to Red Dawn.
MGM will start filming the action film's remake September 8th. And Red Dawn's publicist tells me filming will take 14 weeks, wrapping up in early December. It's a long shoot. They'll be shooting at a number of locations. No word yet on the specific places, including which high school will become the home of the Wolverines. We'll keep you posted. Alicia Smith, Channel 7 Action News.
That is a really long shoot. I swiped that video from ABC7 in Michigan, WXYZ, and posted it up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy. So now it's from a Red Dawn remake to a new, brave, new world. Again, we first hit this story back in March of 2008. But as it gets closer, we've got an update for you. Ridley Scott and Leonardo DiCaprio travel to a brave new world. This from Reuters. Ridley Scott is going back to the futurism. The Blade Runner director is joining forces with DiCaprio to take on one of the most highly regarded dystopian works of literature, Aldous Huxley's Brave New World. Both are producing the Universal project, which DiCaprio would tentatively star in and Scott direct. The studio's brought on Apocalypto writer Farhad Safinia to write the script. He's expected to be working shortly. Scott has mentioned casually in interviews that he's interested in the 1931 novel, whose film rights are owned by DiCaprio's Appian Way production company, prompting a flurry of rumors on sci-fi and other blogs over the past year, but the studio details as well as DiCaprio's personal involvement always have been murky. Huxley sets his book in a seemingly perfect 26th century world that has achieved harmony by tightly controlling birth, which takes place mainly in laboratories, and outlawing the family. The world is populated by a series of five castes, each with its own defined roles. Characters who figure in are Bernard, a lower caste member, and Lenina, the woman with whom he is infatuated. DiCaprio would likely play Bernard, who is persecuted when the leaders of the society find his antisocial behavior. Dystopian stories have sometimes proved difficult to film. George Orwell's 1984 has had several theatrical runs, including Michael Anderson's Columbia version in 1956 and the somewhat better regarded John Hurt vehicle 25 years ago. In that first flashback, Brave New World for Hollywood, that goes back to March of 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com, it is interesting to note, and it goes in a little bit to DiCaprio's background, and I just find it interesting that he's held the film rights for quite some time, and I believe that the family is even somehow connected to Huxley. So follow those flashback links, because we don't have time right now. The other two, more on Huxley's mind control and depopulation through an interview that goes back to last October, and going all the way back to March of 2007, The Future Has Caught Up With Us. That's from Paul Craig Roberts. And as long as we're looking back, let's look back to 1979, not 69 like we started out with Woodstock. Let's jump to 1979 for an ABC News special. Mission Mind Control. Now we can check out, we're going to hit a short clip, and we can see this comes by way of a few different folks, but I picked it up from unemployedsociopath.blogspot.com. We can see in this ABC News special from 1979 what the CIA has been up to and how they've been corrupted to consider dehumanizing American citizens and the rest of the world as normal. To learn how to weaken and control people, they conducted hundreds of Nazi-esque experiments, which is no surprise since the CIA was helped. Founded by hiring thousands of Nazis after World War II.
The human mind, can it be controlled by someone else to perform acts against the will of the individual?
Shoot Bobby Raymond. Through the forest.
Yes, ma'am.
Is control of the human being, such as the Manchurian candidate, possible?
We are not professing to tell you the complete story of these activities. We are professing to tell you the complete story that we know. But these records that we've uncovered don't tell the story. They tell pieces of it.
This is a story that has been told in bits and pieces over the last few years. This is an attempt to pull most of it together. We know we don't have the full story. We do, however, have some striking new revelations and insights. It is a story of a concerted search by several United States intelligence agencies to perfect mind control. In 1953, at the height of the Cold War, President Eisenhower appointed Alan Dulles to be head of the CIA, the first peacetime intelligence agency in United States history. And as it had during OSS days, the search for mind control continued. As this 1952 CIA document shows, the aim at that time was controlling an individual to the point where he will do our bidding against his will, and even against such fundamental laws of nature as self-preservation. There was a discovery here in Basel, Switzerland, Sandoz Laboratories, by Dr. Albert Hoffman, that led the intelligence agencies of America to believe that they had found the panacea. The discovery was lysergic acid diethylamide, LSD.
It was one of the first times that anybody had run into a powerful drug that was different than anything else that they knew anything about.
John Ginninger, recently retired chief psychologist for CIA. This is the first time Ginninger has been interviewed publicly.
in effect, disable the whole city by putting a very small amount in a water supply.
Yeah. It would not be long before the CIA and other intelligence agencies discovered that LSD was not only powerful, but dangerous. A former CIA official who worked on these programs did not wish to be filmed or recorded. The statements he made to ABC consultant John Marks will be read by someone else. They have been corroborated by ABC News.
Mission Mind Control from ABC News 1979, and they mention John Marks, who is, of course, the author of the seminal book In Search of the Manchurian Candidate. That whole report is up. It's up on MySpace TV or broken into multiple parts on YouTube. Mission Mind Control. See, and they start out with the Manchurian Candidate clip that, in a way, what we're looking through on all these media and memes is that they can put it to you as if it's movie time make-believe. That it's not, you know, it's not rooted in reality. I saw that in a movie. It can't, you know, it can't be real. It can't be real. Or can it? There's a film coming out very soon called Carriers. If we hit up a quick report from bloodydisgusting.com, Carriers delivers swine flu pandemic propaganda prep. That's my headline. A deadly virus has spread across the globe. Contagion is everywhere. No one is safe and no one can be trusted. Four young, attractive people race through the back roads of the American West to the pounding beat of a vacation soundtrack. Their aim is to retreat to secluded utopian beach in the Gulf of Mexico where they could peacefully wait out the pandemic and survive the apocalyptic disease. Carriers follows their getaway through a surreal and dangerous world where laws and rules no longer apply. Their plans take a grim turn when their car breaks down on an isolated road, starting a chain of events that will seal the fate of each of them in an execrable and horrifying voyage of hell through a western landscape populated by only the hideous dead or the twisted living. Their desperate retreat south turns into a deadly battle against infected children, homicidal doctors, crazed survivalists, rabid dogs, and finally, of course, each other. The virus is the least of their problems, as horrible choices must be made in the face of lost humanity. Carriers.
In 1347, the Black Death raged across Europe, killing an estimated 35 million people. In 1918, the Spanish flu led to the deadliest epidemic in history. In 2008, prepare for the most devastating plague of all.
An outbreak of avian flu has been confirmed.
Have demonstrated flu-like symptoms.
The city has been quarantined. The death toll is rising at an alarming rate.
The rules are simple. Number one, avoid populated areas at all costs.
Where are you taking us?
I'm taking us to safety.
It's an old motel. The place has been abandoned for years. Number two, if you come into contact with other people...
We ran out of gas!
Assume they have it.
She's got it.
Stay where you are!
Number three, bird flu virus can survive on surfaces up to 24 hours. Never touch anything that's not disinfected.
Do not get too close to her.
It's gonna be fine.
Breathe slow. Okay, okay. You're gonna be okay.
What happened?
Nothing.
And the last rule.
Louder!
The sick are already dead. They can't be saved.
What are you doing to these kids?
You break the rules, you die. You follow them.
Get out.
You live.
Here.
Maybe. Brian?
It's not Brian.
You'll get them.
Somebody had to do it. It was gonna be you, Danny.
Brian!
Stop!
What are you doing?
Get your hands off me!
Don't come any closer.
I'm not infected.
He's got it, doesn't he?
I'm not gonna end up like him. What's going on?
Hold it! No!
there's such an amazing amount of predictive programming going on in film and television and music and the media in general. That's just the latest. That's the trailer from the forthcoming movie, Carriers. We hit Shutter Island last week. Of course, District 9 opens today. This could almost, in a way, mirror what I think, in a way, is kind of the golden age of 70s film. All the amazing dystopic sci-fi futuristic films that we saw then that we're seeing now. Hopefully, the story is what makes it. We can't get by old movies anymore. It's just, it's louder and grosser. Doesn't make it better. So that's the whole raft of media news here on episode 136 of MediaMonarchy.com. Now we're going to hop over to the sister site, FoodWorldOrder.com, for a quick blast of headlines. First, let's hit the 813 binge and purge with an update on HR 2749. The jackasses did it. The seizure of the U.S. food supply and production has passed the House. Now what happens? More on that from farmwars.info. H.R. 2749 is the bill we mentioned previously on a few episodes. It wasn't going to pass. They pulled it. They rewrote it. They remixed it. Brought it up. Passed quickly. Where it sits now, I think, with the recess, I'm not exactly sure, but it all coincides with an ex-Monsanto vice president being appointed by Obama to the Food Safety Working Group of the FDA. From the Times Online, out of the UK, GM crop imports should be increased, say ministers and farmers. More genetically modified crops used to feed pigs, poultry, and dairy cattle could be imported into Britain to meet the demand for animal feed. Ministers are pressing the European Commission to speed up approval of GM crop varieties or risk a collapse in the market for home-produced chicken, eggs, pork, and milk. Farmers have warned that unless they can feed their pigs and poultry on GM soya and maize varieties being grown in North and South America, but which are currently unlicensed for use in Europe, they may be forced to leave the industry. Please, please let us use your genetically modified Frankenfoods. What could possibly go wrong? Salmonella fear sparks massive beef recall. That's from CBS News. But with another one from the great site farmwars.info, Washington quietly mulls new quarantine regulations.
Almost 4 years ago, the Bush administration proposed new rules that would allow them to quarantine people at the borders or really anywhere else in the country if they thought they were suffering from a particularly dangerous disease like plague or Ebola fever or even the swine flu that has recently come out. Now, the Bush administration didn't go forward with the rules because there was sort of a firestorm of criticism from civil liberties folks and from the airline industry, which said the kind of information they'd have to keep would cost them millions and millions of dollars. So the Bush administration put his stuff on the back burner. And I've learned that just in the last few months, the Obama administration has moved it back to the front burner and is in the final process of getting these rules ready. And the details of what the Obama folks are going to propose, we don't know exactly, but it will be something similar to what the Bush folks proposed, which was something called provisional quarantine, which would allow the director of the Centers for Disease Control to basically lock you up for 3 business days as long as 6 calendar days if he suspects either you might have something like swine flu or another kind of disease that's contagious, or even if you were just on an airplane or you might have been exposed to some kind of illness, you could be locked up. There's all kinds of other provisions about having to give or not having to give information, but airlines having to collect information about your traveling companions on international and domestic flights, your email address, and keep that kind of info if there's some kind of a health scare or health emergency so they can track you down. The real question is whether those who protested these rules back in 2005 and 2006 when they were first proposed will put up a similar fight over what the Obama administration is about to do, which could look a lot like what Bush administration proposed.
Huh, that sure sounds familiar. The Obama administration's proposing what looks quite similar to the Bush administration. That's a clip from Politico.com and Josh Gerstein And again, cross-posted to farmwars.info, where farmwars.info adds the extra question, do you have enough food stored? The last headline on this 813 Binge and Purge, Obama's Surgeon General nominee advises Burger King. President Obama's nominee for Surgeon General, whose job it is to help encourage Americans to get thinner and healthier, has been working part-time as a scientific advisor to the fast food giant that sells the Whopper and the BK Triple Stacker. Dr. Regina Benjamin, hailed by Obama for her efforts in running a healthcare clinic in hurricane-ravaged rural Alabama, has been paid $10,000 since last year for serving on a scientific advisory board for Burger King. Change. Have it your way. Oh, Jesus. The other headline from foodworldorder.com comes from foodfreedom.wordpress.com. 6 ways to identify and avoid GMO foods. Recent polls across the world have consistently shown that if they had a choice, 90% of people would actively seek to avoid GMOs in their food. Unfortunately, GMOs are taking over our farmland quickly. It's virtually impossible to avoid eating GM foods unless you know what to look for. Here are 6 good tips. Number 1. Look at the stickers on the fruit. There is a PLU, that's a PLU code, with either 4 or 5 numbers. If your fruit's label has 4 numbers, it is conventionally grown. 5 numbers starting with a 9 means it was organically grown, and 5 numbers starting with an 8 means GMO. Number 2, buy local and talk to your farmers. This is the best way to ensure you're eating real foods. It's estimated that up to 85% of prepackaged and processed foods contain GMOs, so buying fresh from the farm is a great way to avoid that. Number 3, avoid the top 4 GMO crops of soy, corn, canola, and cottonseed. Most blended oils in North America contain canola and cottonseed. Replacing these with 100% extra virgin olive oil is a safe alternative. Number 4. Encourage your favorite food providers to label their food GMO-free. We don't need the government to force companies to label their foods, and we're seeing more and more of that as we consumers have tremendous power. And if enough of us ask for GMO-free labels and support the companies that use them, we'll see a huge increase in labeling, and we're already starting to see this. Number 5. Buy organically grown food. For now, the organic certification process is a relatively safe bet to ensure your food is free of GMOs, although this may not be the case in the future. Help support global sustainability by purchasing certified organically grown food. Number 6, conventional sugar. Over 90% of this year's sugar beet harvest will be Monsanto's GM Roundup Ready sugar beet. That means if you're using sugar or eating anything with sugar in it, you're eating GMOs. There's a link to alternatives from BiteStyle.tv, and the extra bonus note is to grow your own food. Planting a garden using heirloom seeds. More in there. alittlebitofgreen.com. And again, this list comes from Food Freedom. Top 6 ways to identify and avoid GMO foods. You might want to print that out and slap it up on your fridge. So those were some of the latest headlines on foodworldorder.com, one of the sister sites to MediaMonarchy.com, as I try and spin lots of plates. But we're hopping back to MediaMonarchy.com for a couple of ugly news purges. First, it's the BioCyber, Econo Health, and Hitler History. Let's hit the headlines on the BioWars and Swine Flu updates, where from thebostonchannel.com, we've hit this before, we know it, the number of people seeking vaccination exemptions are rising. We've seen in the past that, of course, people are even lying about religious convictions to get out of the vaccination. A Team 5 investigates review of Department of Public Health records finds the number of parents seeking exemptions for immunizations has been steadily rising. The number is growing despite a declining number of kindergarten students over the past decade. Dr. John Cohen, a pediatrician and staunch supporter of vaccination, says, I think it's horrible. There's no religion in this world that says you shouldn't immunize your child. Now, the question would be to ask him if he vaccinates his kids. Fox News cites Infowars.com in a flu pandemic report. Swine flu's worst case scenario, paranoia or preparedness. Let's get to the... Oh, and they even cite Michelle Chosadovsky from Global Research. And they cite Kurt Nimmo from Infowars. In addition to planning mass graves and crematoriums operating around the clock, governments are planning to implement martial law in response to a pandemic, Kurt Nimmo wrote on Infowars.com, which has been tracking disturbing developments in swine flu preparedness. Nimmo pointed to a report in the Daily Telegraph that referred to the British government's emergency plans for, quote, mass graves, inflatable mortuaries, 24-hour cremations, and express funerals. Paranoia or preparedness? Biological warfare and the national security state, a chronology from Tom Burkhardt, an anti-fascist calling from the nationalexpositor.com, asking the question, are new vaccines laced with birth control drugs? That's an old report, but it's worth revisiting for you. State asks volunteers to aid flu vaccinations. That's again from the Boston Globe. Chief medical officer reveals swine flu vaccination plans. This is from The Guardian. People with health conditions will be the first to receive swine flu vaccinations in October, followed by pregnant women. And now it gets really scary. As if, you know, the carrier's trailer wasn't scary enough for you. National Guard takes over a school in a swine flu vaccine riot drill. A high school in Maine is to be taken over by the National Guard. I believe that was yesterday, August 13th, on Thursday, for the purpose of a drill that will see guardsmen deal with unruly citizens begging for swine flu vaccines. Oxford Hills Comprehensive High School in Paris, Maine, has been chosen as a distribution site for the H1N1 flu vaccine by state officials. The drill will enact a riot scenario after Governor John Baldacci and General John Libby, adjutant general of the Maine National Guard, agreed that measures should be in place to deal with a possible public rush for inoculations against the swine flu. On Thursday morning, four or five National Guard Humvees traveled from Augusta to Paris with vials of fake serum, reports the Maine Sun-Journal. The National Guardsmen will take on the roles of panicked citizens and military police and practice what they would do, such as using tear gas in the case of a riot. Local police will also liaise with the National Guard on the school grounds. The school itself will remain open. National Guard takes over a Maine school in a vaccine riot drill. That's from Steve Watson. CDC H1N1 community engagement meetings. There's a set of meetings from everywhere, from Indiana, Alabama, California, Texas, Pennsylvania, New York, Washington, where you can go and make your voice heard about the pandemic prep. Let's see if that gets as much attention as the town halls. The last bit of BioWar swine flu updates comes from the Daily Mail. Tamiflu turned my children into hallucinating, sobbing wrecks. This is a long report and goes into a family who was given Tamiflu. Of course, we know countries like Indonesia are very wary of these new vaccines. But there's a bit about Health Secretary Andy Burnham defended giving swine flu drug Tamiflu to children on GMTV, as the host Andrew Castle said his daughter almost died after taking it. So, of course, Health Secretary Andy Burnham was squirming. A couple cyberspace war notes. NASA says that it's not likely the U.S. will send a man back to the moon by 2020. This is from the Washington Post. NASA doesn't have nearly enough money to meet its goal of putting astronauts back on the moon by 2020, and it may be the wrong place to go anyway. That's one of the harsh messages emerging from a sweeping review of NASA's human spaceflight program. God, will we never get back to the moon? The Department of Homeland Stupidity plans a cybersecurity wiki. This is from Federal Computer Week, FCW.com. It's kind of interesting to note, of course, as we've mentioned, all of the Fed's social networking sites on YouTube and Twitter and places where you can leave comments, that it's really nice to see everybody pretty much come out of the woodwork and call them out for their garbage and their PR. On to the Econo Crash, with a funny note to start it off. I believe when I mentioned this one to my girlfriend, she was like, God, does all the weird stuff happen in Oregon? Mouse builds a nest in an ATM with $20 bills. This is out of La Grande, Oregon. A mouse found inside an ATM along with a nest it had built with chewed up $20 bills gave an Oregon gas station employee the surprise of her life. The mouse, discovered last Thursday, had torn up two bills and damaged another 14 to line the nest. Employee Millie Taylor says she screamed and slammed the machine's door shut. The bank replaced all the money that wasn't extensively damaged, and the ATM has continued to work just fine. The mouse also got a reprieve. He was evicted from his nest but set free outside the station. Other workers at the Gym Stop Chevron in La Grande in eastern Oregon say they're mystified about how the mouse got inside the machine. The mouse in the machine. So, it's funny to note, it was like, well, if it wasn't totally destroyed, we sent it back in circulation. With some mouse flu, probably. Americans working much harder for much less pay. Surprise, surprise. This is from MSNBC.com. Feel like you're working a lot harder these days? Putting in long hours for the same pay or even less? The latest round of Gov data on worker productivity indicates that you probably are. The Labor Department said Tuesday that the American workforce produced, at an annual rate, 6.4% more of the goods they made and services they provided in the second quarter of this year compared to a year ago. Put simply, we're falling apart. The rug is being pulled out. It's a controlled demolition, which will bring about the new financial world order. From the LA Times, more on California's budget woes. Budget may force California state parks to close. But from Washington's blog, economist Mark Faber says the U.S. will probably launch more wars to distract from the bad economy. The claim that America would launch more wars to help the economy is outrageous, right? Certainly. But leading economist Mark Faber has repeatedly said that the American government will start new wars in response to the economic crisis, such as, quote, "The next thing the government will do to distract the attention of the people on bad economic conditions is they'll start a war somewhere." The other quote is, "If the global economy doesn't recover, usually people go to war." Is he crazy? Is he right? Is he wrong? But people like Faber and Gerald Celente, as noted by Justin Rwando on antiwar.com, these guys are unfortunately generally right, and they've been right for decades. They give Gerald Celente the hat tip that said he was pretty much the one few economists who pointed to the econo crash we experienced last September. Gosh, can you believe it's almost been a whole year? Cash magically appeared on their electronic benefit cards. This coming from Cryptogon.com by way of the New York Daily News, a $200 back-to-school giveaway for needy kids sparked a mad rush for money on the streets of New York on Tuesday. It's free money, says Alicia Rumpf, 26, who waited in Morris Park in the Bronx, lined 300 people deep for the cash to buy uniforms and book bags for her two kids. Thank God for Obama. He's looking out for us. thousands of people lined up at banks and check cashing shops to withdraw the cash that magically appeared on their electronic benefit cards. Some rushed out because of rumors the money would vanish by the end of the day. Rumors, there's always rumors, said Teresa Medina, who waited 4 hours at the Pay-O-Matic in Clinton Hill, Brooklyn, to get $600 for her three teenagers, just in case they were true. The no-strings-attached money went to families receiving food stamps or welfare. Well, maybe that woman was right at the inauguration. No, I won't have to pay my mortgage. I won't have to pay for anything. Obama-size is going to rapture me up. From BusinessInsider.com, traders brace for September collapse. When everyone's thinking the same thing, it never happens. And what everyone is thinking of right now is that when August is over and we get down to business, this market's going to be in for some hurting. Folks have been saying it all summer as bulls make mincemeat of bears without mercy, and now traders are starting to place their bets on the wheels coming off soon. They cite Bloomberg, and they're citing September. Will we see a mad convergence of forced vaccinations, a market collapse, some type of rumored bank holiday, bank runs coming soon? But the last note on the econo crash from Russia today, a court throws out the FOIA lawsuit against the Federal Reserve.
Attempts by the U.S. media to use the Freedom of Information Act to find out which banks received federal loans during the financial crisis have been blocked. Let's now cross to our Washington studio, where RT's Alyona Minkowski is with legal analyst Nicole Cardell to find out where the law stands on this. Hello to you, Alyona. So, you're welcome.
Thank you. Well, that's right. At a time of financial crisis in the U.S., after a nearly $800 billion stimulus package was passed earlier this year, and after a $700 billion bailout was passed in 2008 under the Bush administration, Americans are wanting to know, where is all that money going? Already, lawmakers are trying to pass a bill that would ask for an audit of the Federal Reserve, but there are some media outlets out there trying to take a different route. They're filing lawsuits under the Freedom of Information Act. The bad news, just last week, one of these lawsuits in which they're trying to find out which banks were given bailouts and how much money they got was rejected. So a loss for transparency when a lot of Americans want to see it most. So why is this happening and is all hope lost?
Well, that's because it's change you can see right through. A couple notes on Enviro Health. First, a disturbing one. This from Reuters. IBM, that's the International Business Machines, they see a big opportunity in water management technology. IBM is pushing ahead into providing technology services to manage water, a market $10 billion market that the company sees growing quickly. That's a typo in that Reuters report. Market $10 billion market. This is, to me, an area that's really going to explode in the next 3 to 5 years, said Sharon Noons, who heads IBM's Big Green Innovations Initiative. People see it as a gap. The water market is transforming. Big Green Innovations, a play on IBM's nickname Big Blue, is part of IBM's so-called Smarter Planet Initiative that aims to supply information technology to efficiently manage electrical grids, transportation systems, and other infrastructure. I shouldn't have to tell you, IBM knows a thing or two about infrastructure. So when you see them getting set for the water wars, you should probably be worried. IBM and the Hollerith punch card machines. All documented. Edwin Black, IBM and the Holocaust. There it is. GDF Suez unit gets EU approval to take water firms. This also from Reuters. French water distribution firm Lyonnais des Eaux, a unit of GDF Suez, won permission from the European Commission on Wednesday to acquire six firms active in water collection. And an interesting one from Green Inc., one of the blogs on the New York Times, where they note that having children brings high carbon impact. I think I've mentioned before, I'd like to get this phrase out there for people to pick it up, you know, that I'm going to put my carbon footprint in your ass. The thing that kills me about this, and I work in a place where I see nothing but kids, and kids in the on the way, and kids in the basket, and tons of them, kids, kids, kids. I've heard it downplayed that there was the Obama baby boom. I see it. It may be in here, trendy, liberal Portland, Oregon. But these people that are cranking out the kids are going to be the same people who will get on board for the carbon footprint eugenics coming soon. I don't want to get into all that. I'm talking about kids. Let's hit history mystery. Instead of talking about kids, let's talk about how Royal Dutch Shell saved Hitler and the Nazi Party. This is by way of Alex Constantine, but it's posted up on royaldutchshellplc.com. News and information on Royal Dutch Shell. It's an updated article about the role of Royal Dutch Shell as a collaborator and financial supporter of Hitler and the Nazi Party via its founder, Sir Henri Detterding. D-E-T-E-R-D-I-N-G. Further research has revealed evidence that a huge injection of Royal Dutch Shell funds by Sir Henri saved the Nazi Party from collapse, and in doing so, indirectly caused millions of deaths in World War II. It was just indirect, though. It's collateral damage. Another flashback by way of Alex Constantine that points over to heraldnet.com. Washington State GOP County Council candidate, that's a current candidate, pled guilty to incest with his 9-year-old daughter in 1983. And this article on heraldnet.com basically goes through how all that info is now publicly available, and he's having trouble hiding from his messy past. Now we have another news purge. This time it's media, Metro Mayhem, and barracks and burgers. First up, the media memes. Hollywood's distortion of the truth alters history in the eyes of school children. This comes from the UK, coming from the Telegraph. Hollywood's habit of playing with historical facts is leading school children to get it wrong too, even if they read the true story in classrooms. This all from a new academic study. Researchers have found that film is an incredibly powerful tool for teaching children about the past, which can greatly increase historical knowledge. However, it's so powerful that if the facts are wrong, pupils are more likely to believe them, even if they are told otherwise by textbooks or teachers. When films get it right, the children benefit enormously and remember much more detail when later questioned. But when they get it wrong, so do the kids. Even if they've read the correct version in a textbook, they remember what was in the film, not what was in the book. Hollywood stars, from Tom Cruise to Denzel Washington, as well as British actors like Anthony Hopkins, have made films about historical events with glaring factual errors, the report said. These include showing Mozart as a spoiled brat in Amadeus when he was not, or of the Americans cracking the top secret Nazi codes in the film U-571 when really it was the British. Operation Hollywood, indeed. What goes along with that? Well, from Existentialist Cowboy, how big media subverted U.S. democracy with lies, smears, and gross propaganda. This is written by the head of Existentialist Cowboy, Len Hart, where he starts out by talking about Rush Limbaugh, as loathsome as he is a tool, a media whore. The real power still resides in the media boardrooms, and they just don't give a shit if every media outlet is run by a Muzak machine or a raving lunatic like Limbaugh. They're in it for the big bucks and power. That article is much deeper than what I just gave you, but I think you can kind of illustrate it by looking at Rupert Murdoch and News Corporation, that they run Fox News here in America, which is supposedly conservative, but then they have the Fox TV channel, which always has had the most filthy shows. But you jump overseas to Sky News, and they're far more critical of the states. and our crazy warlike attitudes. But of course, you know, we learned it by watching you guys. We're Europe Junior, like Carlin said. Rapper gets 2 years for his cop-killing song. And no, it's not Ice-T and Body Count and Cop Killer. It's a Florida rapper sentenced to 2 years in prison for a song called Kill Me a Cop that he produced as a teenager. Authorities say 20-year-old Antavio Johnson raps about killing two Lakeland, Florida police officers in the tune, which cops found on MySpace while surfing for gang-related activity. Johnson pleaded no contest to 2 counts of corruption by threat of a public servant and was sentenced to 2 years in prison last month, and he was already in jail on a coke charge at the time. Singing about killing a cop was not Johnson's first mistake. Pleading guilty and not hiring a lawyer were. Just ask Ice Cube and NWA, who sang Fuck the Police as a form of police protest more than 20 years ago. But back in 1988, NWA had everyone from the FBI to the Secret Service breathing down its neck and lawsuits galore. If someone could have figured out a way to charge the group with a crime, lock them up and throw away the key, I'm sure it would have happened. According to TheDailyBeast.com, Johnson was trying to make a similar lyrical protest when he wrote Kill Me a Cop about two police officers who harassed him. That goes on, and that's from BVBlackspin.com. Rapper gets 2 years for cop-killing song. Before we proceed down this news purge with a little murder and mayhem, I should stop and tell you, we're now into hour number 2 of episode 136 of MediaMonarchy.com. It's August 14th, 2009. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com, FoodWorldOrder.com, CyberspaceWar.com, and on and on. As always, huge thanks to the Portland Radio Authority, PRARadio.org, and ZeroPointRadio.com, RevereRadio.net, FROlympia.org, BoulderFreeRadio.com, Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, and CascadiaPublicRadio.org. Now back to our program. Murder and mayhem. Plane and copter collide over the Hudson River, killing 9, I believe, if we glance to Google News. Oh, it's gotten pushed from the top because we need space for Michael Vick news stories. But I believe the latest that has come out on this crash is that somebody was on the telephone with a personal call. The other report comes from the Deutsche Press Agency in that initial report from the Associated Press. More pilot error. This time, pilot error blamed for the July crash of Aria Air Flight 1525 in Iran. Car fleeing the California police hits a pickup and kills 7. And the last few notes here. We started to track this several months ago with the general mass murder media meme contagion going on with all the shooters and events. Then we hit Ardent Century. Terror drills that featured train derailments. And at that precise moment, we started to see some train derailments. We had the hazmat situation in Illinois, and then a couple days later, the massive crash of the DC metro system. The metro, I've been on many, many times. That train that crashed last month, I had probably been on that very train before, at least according to my man Kurt. But the latest from the Washington Post, as well as numerous other places, we'll hit the first one. Metro employee fatally injured near the Vienna station. This goes back to Monday, August 10th. A Metro employee was fatally injured Sunday night when he was struck by track maintenance equipment on the Orange Line in Fairfax County. So that one was an accident. We also have Metro order safety training after track worker is killed. That's the same Orange Line situation. Not sure if they've announced the guy's name yet. Yes, they have. Michael Nash, 63, of Silver Spring, Maryland, had been a track repairman since 1990. The latest report from the 12th, man struck and killed at the Vienna station. Orange Line, again, the Orange Line train kills man in another case of apparent suicide. A man was struck and killed Wednesday morning by a metro train entering the West Falls Church VTUVA station, at least the fifth time a person has intentionally stepped in front of a train since the beginning of June. It's highly unusual, spokeswoman Lisa Farbstein said. Interestingly enough, we jump down to the bottom of this article. Very last paragraph. Passenger Teresa Jones, 42, of Upper Marlboro, was puzzled by the recent spate of Metro incidents. Quote, "For the Metro not to have any incidents for 20 years, it makes me wonder if some sabotage is going on, because everything seems to be going wacko all of a sudden." Metro mayhem indeed. Last bit on this 813 News Purge Media Metro Mayhem Barracks and Burgers. It's War Horse time with some barracks and some Burger Kings. Oh, there's Burger King again. The U.S. builds a supersized base in Afghanistan. This from politicsdaily.com. Dateline Bagram Air Force Base in Afghanistan. Anyone who thinks the Afghani surge is a temporary one-time deal should watch the construction here of a vast new $17 million barracks building. It ain't temporary. It's three stories of concrete. 8 years after American forces scattered the Taliban and effectively conquered Afghanistan, the U.S. has embarked on a frenzied $220 million building campaign at this sprawling and still expanding military airbase. Just to meet the base's demand for fresh concrete, it has two of its own cement factories working full time. There's plenty of guessing these days about whether General Stanley Killer McChrystal, the top commander in Afghanistan, will recommend a large troop increase here, and if so, how many, and if he does, will Obama agree? But perhaps the construction of the new troop barracks and permanent new facilities such as water treatment plants, headquarter buildings, fuel farms, and power-generating plants says more about the size and duration of this war than any White House press conference or Pentagon PowerPoint presentation. If we jump down a little bit, we'll get to the burgers. Bagram sports a Burger King and a Pizza Hut, five mess halls, and living quarters for 20,000 people so far. Office spaces for the command, Joint Task Force 82, and for dozens of other headquarters and agencies. A well-stocked PX sells everything from potato chips to vacuum cleaners. Change you can believe in. We hit the latest revelations that, are, of course, aren't exactly shocking about Blackwater Worldwide and Eric Prince. The Blackwater Prince. And, of course, they're now known as ZXE. The latest that we have from CNN, Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky, a Democrat of Illinois, says U.S. ties with Blackwater must end. A member of Congress last Friday called on the State Department to stop doing business with Z, the North Carolina-based security company formerly known as Blackwater Worldwide. Representative Jan Schakowsky, Democrat of Illinois, asked Secretary of State Hillary Clinton whether the State Department had just signed a new $20 million contract for Z with Iraq, saying she is very concerned that the State Department may be signing new security contracts with Z, both in Iraq and Afghanistan. Saying, quote, "I urge you not to enter into further contracts with Z and to immediately review any existing contracts. The behavior and actions of both the company's leadership and a number of individuals employed by the company have harmed our mission in Iraq and Afghanistan and endangered the lives and welfare of our troops and diplomatic personnel serving overseas." The latest revelations came, of course, last week from Jeremy Scahill in a new article on The Nation, where two ex-Blackwater employees have come forward to blow the whistle on basically murder and rape and mayhem and slavery. All the things that the private military contractors do because we pay them to do it, like DynCorp and Halliburton. from Dar Jamail and truthout.org, another soldier refuses Afghanistan deployment. Sergeant Travis Bishop, who served 14 months in Baghdad with the 3rd Signal Brigade, faces a court-martial today for refusing to deploy to Afghanistan. Bishop is the second soldier from Fort Hood in as many weeks to be tried by the military for his stand in an occupation he believes is illegal. He insists that it would be unethical for him to deploy to support an occupation he opposes on both moral and legal grounds and has filed for a conscientious objector status. Another soldier refuses. Which, of course, as we hit some of the refusals that were related to the birther issue several weeks ago, we saw the controlled opposition like Keith Olbermann come out and call people cowards. Because you're a coward now if you don't want to participate in Obama's war of terror. The last note on the news purge and the war whores coming from Danger Room. Pentagon secret budget tops $35 billion. The Defense Department will spend $35.8 billion on secret technologies in 2010, according to a new report that you can download the PDF from the D.C.-based Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessments. That represents the second highest level of funding provided for classified acquisition programs since fiscal year 1987. What does all this black cash buy? A lot of things that Danger Room ain't going to talk about. So that was the second news purge. We now have even more fallout. The story goes on, and of course it should, because it's directly related to scaring the bejesus out of the population, reminding them of 9/11 terror. So the latest on Air Force One, the Air Force used Twitter and YouTube to track the fallout, which of course should be no surprise. We're going to hit the Associated Press report on this, but there's another one from the Boston Herald. Social net sites eyed as threat. And of course they are. Of course social networking sites are eyed as a threat, as the DOD fights the net as if it were a quote-unquote enemy weapons system. This all according, of course, to the Information Operations Roadmap. You can read the whole amazing breakdown on that from Brent Jessup from Knowledge Driven Revolution. As the Pentagon warns of the security risks posed by social networking sites, newly released government documents show the military also uses these internet tools themselves to monitor and react to coverage of high-profile events. The Air Force tracked online messaging service Twitter, video sharing site YouTube, and various blogs to assess the huge public backlash to the Air Force One flyover of the Statue of Liberty this spring. While the attempts at damage control failed, with one PowerPoint chart reading, quote, "No positive spin is possible," the episode opens a window into the tactics for operating in a boundless digital news cycle. Links in there and flashbacks in there to the Boston Herald. To just run the Google search on your own for Information Operation Roadmap and read about the internet as an enemy weapon system, full spectrum information warfare. More from the Associated Press, more from AR15.com, and the flashback to last week, where we had 146 photos of the Air Force One stunt released thanks to Freedom of Information Act requests. Now, it's interesting to note in that it says that it almost makes it seem like they, oh God, it seems like there's a big public backlash to this. Maybe we should check out what people are saying. The other idea is, of course, that they knew this was going to be a huge deal. They knew exactly what they were doing, and they used Twitter and YouTube and Media Monarchy to see exactly how people were going to freak out about this thing. I wonder what they thought. Now, we'll, of course, at the very end of the show, get to some of the visitors to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. And it's essentially these agencies that we're talking about. the military, as well as the private military contractors. But now it's time for the change we can see right through. Obamasiah and the Apostles of War updates on the North American Union, the Town Hall health scare, and so much more. We, of course, just had the Three Amigos meeting. That's the name they originally called it when it was Bush and Vicente Fox. And it may have even been Martin from Canada back then. But now it's Obama, Calderon from Mexico, and Harper from Canada. They keep meeting. They keep working. It started under Bush. It's called the Security and Prosperity Partnership. It's essentially a North American Union. So some of these first headlines are going to relate to the integration. But first, from USA Today, Obama says North America needs aggressive action targeting the long and painful recession. Obama said Monday that he and the leaders of Mexico and Canada have agreed to, quote, aggressive, coordinated action to restore growth across North America. Noting the huge trading partnership among the three neighbors, Obama said that commerce must be expanded, not restricted. Wrapping up a North American summit Monday afternoon, Obama joined Calderon and Harper for a news conference after about 2 hours of talks, noting the huge trading partnership. Jesus, what's with the typos, people? You already typed that. So we hit the typo from Reuters a little bit ago. Now here's a big, massive typo from USA Today. I like to think it's because they're sloppy, because they're struggling to keep up with the alternative media. Where's the good part here? On commerce, Obama said that a Buy America provision in the giant economic stimulus package earlier this year had not hurt trade with Canada. I do think it's important to keep this into perspective. This in no way has endangered the billions of dollars in trade taking place between our two countries. The men spoke at the end of a swift North American Leaders Summit, an annual gathering launched during Shrub's presidency. This goes on to talk about swine flu and the CDC and the Mexico military and NAFTA. And I'm sure there's little hints in there, you know, about the Trans-Texas Corridor, the NAFTA Superhighway, North American Union, foreign troops, the end of national sovereignty. All those things, I'm sure, are covered in the USA Today report. Let's jump to borderfirereport.net. Where we go towards a North American energy corridor. This, of course, being a play on some of the think tank white papers by white people coming from folks like the CFR and Robert Pastor and guys like that. Towards a North American energy corridor is just another part of the integration. Here's an interesting tie-in from Threat Level. Canadian bus driver refuses U.S. background check and wins. A Canadian school bus driver who refused to allow a U.S. security firm to perform a mandatory background check out of privacy concerns has won her battle. Stephanie Sidihia, a driver for First Student Canada, opposed the background check out of fear of what the private U.S. firm might do with her personal info once it had the data, this according to the CBC. Apparently, others expressed similar concerns because the bus company announced this week that it would only use a Canadian company to perform the checks from now on after considering the issue. I think it's a good move, Stephanie said. I guess my preference would still be that it would be done by a police agency rather than another third-party company, but certainly I'm glad that the information isn't going to be available to the American authorities. I wouldn't be so sure, but this, again, brings up the debate about the highways and who can drive what, where, and without any kind of checks. But again, it's checks on you, not checks on the other people. People that can be known as trusted travelers. DHS expands global trusted traveler program. Another article from FCW.com, Federal Computer Week. The Homeland Stupidity Department's International Registered Traveler Program is going strong. The program is expanding from 7 to 20 airports starting August 24th. DHS started the Global Entry International Trusted Traveler Program in June 08 as a pilot project at 3 airports. It grew to 7 last fall. U.S. citizens and others who want to enroll in Global Entry must submit to a security check, an interview, and provide a fingerprint. Once enrolled, upon returning to the USSA, they can use a kiosk to process their passports and scan their fingerprints. This typically results in less waiting than a manual check by U.S. Customs and Border Protection employees. To date, approximately 16,000 people have enrolled in Global Entry at the 7 existing locations, and in April, Homeland Stupidity signed an agreement for reciprocal treatment with airports in the Netherlands. The kiosks will open in Boston, Dallas, Detroit, Fort Lauderdale, Honolulu, Las Vegas, Newark, New Jersey, Orlando, Florida, Sanford, Florida, Philly, San Juan, Puerto Rico, San Francisco, and Seattle. Meanwhile, DHS's Domestic Trusted Traveler Program, Registered Traveler, which has been operating as a public-private partnership since 2005, has been faltering since its largest private vendor abruptly shut down operations in June. MediaMonarchy.com brought you that story again. These little things seem like little weird bureaucratic rumblings, but it's the setup. They're setting it all up. Obama officials to tour Michigan prison. This from the Associated Press. Michigan prison assessed for possible Gitmo transfers. We hit this report last week. It's the Standish prison. And, of course, the military penitentiary at Fort Leavenworth. But, man, they're getting on it. Federal and state officials already visited a maximum security prison in rural Michigan yesterday to begin assessing its suitability to house Guantanamo Bay detainees. You know, the goat farmers who've never been charged for a crime, and even though they won't be found of anything, we can still lock them up forever. This means you, too. White House objects to use of Obama girls in lunch ads. I believe it was a public service announcement, but that's from the Deutsche Press Agency. Ben Stein, you probably know him from Win Ben Stein's Money or from Bueller. This from Steve Watson, columnist who compared Obama campaign to Hitler's Nuremberg rallies is expelled. A columnist for the New York Times has publicly stated that he believes he was fired last week simply for criticizing Obama and his policies. Commentator Ben Stein writes in the American Spectator, pointed out by way of MediaMatters.org, that the real reason for his dismissal was not, as the Times indicated, due to a conflict of interest arising from his role as a spokesperson for credit rating service Freescore.com, nor for budgetary issues. Rather, Ben Stein states he was, quote, expelled from the New York Times due to recent criticism of Obama. The two main things I see them as I see them were that I started criticizing Mr. Obama quite sharply over his policies and his practices. I tried to do this before over the firing of Rick Wagoner from the chairmanship of GM. My column had questioned whether there was a legal basis for the firing by the government, what law allowed or authorized the federal government to fire the head of what was then a private company, and just where the Obama administration thought their limits were, if anywhere. This column was flat out nixed by the editors at the Times because, in their opinion, Ms. Obama inherently had such powers. So if the president does it, it's not illegal. So that could include sexually torturing children in front of their parents or firing the heads of private corporations. Stein added, by a total coincidence, I was tossed overboard immediately after my column attacking Obama. Remember, you can attack Obama from the left at the Times, but not from the right. Stein is well known for his controversial 2008 film, Expelled, in which he argued that the scientific theory of evolution has contributed to the rise of fascism, communism, atheism, abortion, and eugenics. Stein believes that his commitment to this project also contributed to his eventual dismissal following a barrage of hate mail from those he describes as neo-Darwinists. He also cites his questioning of Goldman Sachs' activity as another reason for his firing. I made a new set of antagonists by repeatedly and in detail criticizing the real power in this country, the investment bank Goldman Sachs, for what seemed to me questionable behavior. This elicited a mountain of favorable mail, but also some complaints by well-placed persons. Stein was, of course, previously criticized in 2008... in an interview after comparing one of Obama's major campaign rallies to Adolf Hitler's Nazi rallies in Nuremberg. That's, of course, speaking of the big Denver event. Stimulus transparency watchdog keep contract details secret. That's from rawstory.com. And again, we just kind of have to laugh at this, and I just keep waiting for people to have their old shit moment. Back in July, a software company named Smartronics landed an $18 million contract to build a website where taxpayers could easily track billions in federal stimulus money. It was just another part of the Obama administration's ongoing effort to bring transparency to stimulus spending, we were told. But it seems the drive for transparency doesn't cover the contract itself. After weeks of plotting and prodding by ProPublica and other organizations, the General Services Administration released copies of the contract and related documents that are so heavily blacked out they are virtually worthless. Hit the link and see it yourself. Transparency, you can see right through. Another cutting, some would say divisive and spiteful, op-ed piece from Lee Rogers at RogueGovernment.com. The Obama Joker posters, another bullshit distraction courtesy of the alternative media. So speaking of InfoWars, who he's mainly pointing his barrels at, media floats talking point that gun owners are domestic terrorists. Now we're getting into the town halls, the homegrown errorism, the health scare. So this is all going to relate to, of course, the new Southern Poverty Law Center report that militias are on the rise. We'll get to that in just a second. There's also the video of Chris Matthews trying to roast the guy who brought a gun to a presidential rally. I don't really want to wade into that one. From Washington's blog, they wonder what's up with these town hall protests, where basically he says that, you know, liberal writers that he's respecting say that the protests are wholly orchestrated by big healthcare companies and their insurers. Conservative writers I respect say the protests are not simply about healthcare, but are spontaneous and authentic demonstrations by the American people against horrible government policies under Obama, Bush, and other administrations which are bankrupting our country. Again, citing Gerald Celente. Again, citing upheaval. Revolution, he calls it quite plainly. I think it also, a lot of it gives our Congress critters the chance to look like they're actually public officials. They're actually doing something, that they're not completely bought and paid for whores. Speaking of our local whores, Representative David Wu did have the balls to put on a town hall and got barraged with lots of people. Earl Blumenauer, on the other hand, who is my rep in Portland, Oregon, who's on the wrong side of so many things. The fact that he rides a bike is basically the best thing going for him, because we'll get to, of course, how he wants to track mileage in Oregon with GPS on your car, you know, for your carbon footprint. Doesn't want to audit the Fed. Gave him a phone call on that one. But I digress. Offensive targeting of liberty movement picks up steam. Again, from Kurt Nemo. And again, we're just kind of painting the broad picture. Globalist snob Rothkopf says town hall demonstrators are morons. David Rothkopf, managing director of Kissinger and Associates and a member of the Council on Foreign Relations, has published an op-ed in the globalist propaganda periodical Foreign Policy, again from the CFR. We're not going to spend much time on that, but of course we hit last year, Rothkopf's new book, Superclass, The Global Power Elite and the World They Are Making. Of course, we can also call it the elitist blueprint for world government. Again, this just all ties into the rabble fighting amongst themselves. And I'm left, and you're right, and I'm conservative, and you're liberal, and we're this, and we'll tear each other apart. Because we don't look to see behind the curtain. They throw the balls out for us and we fight over them. So whether it's Limbaugh or Olbermann or Maddow or Stewart or any of them, We're participating in our own manipulation. Partipulation.com. Why aren't progressives disrupting Obamacare town halls? That's the question from obamboozled.blogspot.com. That's a blog run, I believe, by David Lindorf as well as others. But now let's get to the SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center. Because they say that militias are on the rise. And if you've listened to this show pretty much any time in the last year, I've pointed out again and again and again and again that when the fake left is in, the enemy is militias and Wacos and McVeighs and anti-abortionists and all that, like it was in the Clinton era. Then Bushy comes in and the enemy's over there. We got to go fight him over there so we don't have to fight him here. Then Obama-Saya comes in and it shifts right back to homegrown errorism. Southern Poverty Law Center says militias on the rise. Let's get the report from Council on Foreign Relations member Katie Couric.
Federal agents are becoming increasingly concerned about a rise in the number of heavily armed militia groups springing up around the country. A report out today says the movement is fueled by extremists who are angry with the government and dislike having an African American in the White House. With more on that story, here's Justice Correspondent Bob Orr.
In Ohio, citizen soldiers train for urban combat, while snipers in Michigan practice with high-powered weapons. And their call to arms echoes across the internet.
You have the right to keep and bear arms. Go out and buy a gun.
It's all part of what the Southern Poverty Law Center calls a resurgence in the anti-government militia movement. A report out today claims 50 new militia training groups have sprung up in less than 2 years. And the right-wing extremists, historically motivated by a distrust of government, are now especially angry about the election of America's first African-American president.
We've seen a real streak of racism injected into the movement, and I think the reason for that primarily is the idea that the enemy, the federal government, is headed by a black man.
The report cites recent attacks carried out by lone wolf actors motivated by radical ideologies. Three Pittsburgh police officers killed by an avowed white supremacist. A Wichita doctor murdered by an anti-abortion rights protester. And a Holocaust Museum security guard gunned down by a Nazi sympathizer. Now law enforcement authorities are urging the public to be vigilant.
If you have an individual who's consistently talking about taking up arms against innocence, against government, that should be a clear red flag for people to take action.
The report concludes the threat from radical groups and militias is not as great as it was in the 90s, a decade that brought the fiery standoff in Waco and the bombing of the Oklahoma City Federal Building.
But officials say a sour economy, a Democrat-controlled government, and a black president present a kind of perfect storm that could further fuel the growth of the militia movement. Bob Orr, CBS News, Washington.
Further fanning the growth of the militia movement, this is CBS News. And they just said right there, it was like, well, there was tons more back in the 90s when we didn't have a black president. And again, it's the racial politics. It's the divisive politics. It's also funny to say, you know, oh, the red flag should be anybody that's talking consistently about taking up arms. That should raise a red flag because that's probably the Fed that has infiltrated your group. One of the comments on some of these reports, a Southern Poverty Law Center supporter says that we should execute Alex Jones for his political beliefs. The last couple bits here from Congressman Brune out of Georgia. This came from onlineathens.com with the headline called Obamacare, a Rotten Fish, says Brune at Town Hall, where within that he hints that the Democrats could use a pandemic to declare martial law. This is not the first time in the recent months that we've heard low-level members of Congress saying they hear chatter of martial law. That's military law. That's the military doing law enforcement. They haven't done that yet. So there are reports from Raw Story, OnlineAthens.com, Infowars.com, and a little more on, I believe we mentioned last week, from Google News, GOP Florida Senator Mel Martinez has resigned. That's from the Deutsche Press Agency. And the last bit from the Huffington Post, Conservative Epistemology 101, facts are a crazy conspiracy theory, which I think plays right into the fact that we see the phony left-right paradigm. You can see all the problems in your opposing party. So you can see Michael Wiener talking about the New World Order and false flag terrorism, but they can't see it in their own party. And vice versa. Let's pick up the pace here in the last less than half an hour. There is a video. I am not going to play the clip for you. You need to see it for yourself. George Washington versus Benedict Arnold. New voting machine hack revealed. This by way of Raw Story and Raw Replay. A team of computer scientists at the University of California, San Diego, and the University of Michigan and Princeton University announced a new way to electronically steal votes. You can link to the report from the scientists, jacobsschool.ucsd.edu, or just watch the video, New Voting Machine Hack Revealed. Fraudulent voting systems, again, is that little 800-pound gorilla that sits in the room that sits on top of everything, just like the other one. And that's the events of September 11th, 2001. The latest 9/11 updates, Accidents, Arguments, and Interrogation Incorporated, first from the New Jersey Star-Ledger. 9/11 survivors call for renewed probe as 8th anniversary nears. The 8th anniversary of the 9/11 attacks is a month away, and some survivors of those lost believe it's a good time to renew an investigation into the events of that disastrous day. New York City agrees. We never have learned the truth. It's as simple as that, end quote, says Lori Van Auken of East Brunswick, New Jersey, one of the most ardent supporters of the creation of the 9/11 Commission in 2002. It was headed by former New Jersey Governor Thomas Keene, of course, after Kissinger had to step down. Members and staff of the 9/11 Commission have said many of the questions raised by the attacks have never been answered. That's in Keene and Hamilton's book, Without Precedent, where they said, wow, it almost seemed like they were lying to us or that we were set up to fail. This all ties in, of course, with the new voter initiative, the NYC CAN, going up in New York right now, where I think if you put it to New Yorkers, do you want a real murder criminal investigation into 9/11? All we got out of the 9/11 Commission omission report was what happened and what draconian measures we can take to make you think that things like this could never happen again. Always something ridiculous going on at Ground Zero. Man falls into a 10-foot hole at the World Trade Center site.
All right, welcome back, everybody. We do have some breaking news in Lower Manhattan.
Jim Smith is live in Air 11 right now with reports of a construction accident at the World Trade Center site. Jim?
Yeah, Tamsin, what we can tell you is that a person was injured here earlier this morning at the World Trade Center site near Washington and Vesey Street. So according to the fire department, they rescued a person, a man, out of a 10-foot hole. Not clear whether that person was a worker or somebody else here on the site. They were taken to Bellevue Hospital. Their condition is still unknown. The fire department has wrapped up their activity here. There are still some police cars on the scene here at Washington Street. Again, though, a male has been taken from the scene here at the World Trade Center site after falling 10 feet into a hole. Their condition not known at this time. Live in Air 11, Jim Smith, back to you.
All right, Jim, thank you.
That's another video swiped by me and put up to youtube.com/mediamonarchy. Google temporarily shut down Sybil Edmonds' blog at 123realchange.blogspot.com. That's, of course, because she's been trying to break revelations about Bin Laden's involvement with the intelligence agencies up to 9/11. An op-ed from the New York Times, Ground Zero stalls again as lucky Larry Silverstein once more. Ground Zero first responder John McNamara dies of cancer. This from the New York Daily News. An FDNY veteran who worked tirelessly at Ground Zero and pushed for better health care benefits for first responders died Sunday after a battle with cancer. John McNamara, 44. We take comfort in knowing this hero no longer suffers, said John Feel, head of Feel Good Foundation, FEALGoodFoundation.com, a group for September 11th first responders. From PTINews.com, the White House says 9/11 plotters planning attack against U.S. This came from a brief mention from the White House Deputy Press Secretary Bill Burton talking to the press corps above Air Force One, saying, quote, "We should keep in mind that the reason we are in Afghanistan is because the people who plotted and executed the attacks on 9/11 are still operating there and are plotting attacks against Americans even now." And you know, Bill Burton, he has it right. The people who plotted and executed the attacks are operating there. We just mentioned they're building huge multi-million-dollar bases. Another bit from the New York Times, Interrogation, Inc. Two U.S. architects of harsh tactics in 9/11's wake, Jim Mitchell and Bruce Jensen, were military retirees and psychologists on the lookout for business ops, and they found it with the CIA. They didn't have any real training, but they had psychology credentials and an intimate knowledge of a brutal treatment regime, or rather regimen, used decades ago by Chinese communists. And that was good enough for an administration who wanted to get it on. CIA, mind control, and torture, that's just movie stuff. Remember Shutter Island? It's make-believe. Joel Hirshhorn has a great piece on 9/11 Mind Swell about how far 9/11 truth has come, but has hit some type of ceiling, and why. Starting to run out of time, and I won't be able to do justice to all the latest terror drills. Practicing to take over your city. NORAD's Fabric Virgo Drills, August 12th and 13th, prepping for the 2010 Olympics in British Columbia. This from Defense Watch. The North American Aerospace Defense Command and the Canadian NORAD will conduct Exercise Fabric Virgo in southwestern BC in support of prep for the upcoming Vancouver 2010 Olympic Games. So that's Fabric Virgo. We also have Badger Denial. Great list of names this week. Police state updates, Badger Denial, Reliant Mermaid, and more. Iowa National Guard to hold extensive training August 11th through September 4th. This rescued from LexisNexis. The Iowa Air National Guard and various active duty units will participate in a joint training event, Badger Denial, August 10th to September 4th in Des Moines, Iowa, and Northwest Iowa. The Air Guard's participation in the global war of terror requires joint reconnaissance and combat support missions. Some guys on their way to the terror drills, they ran out of fuel and had to land their Army Chinook chopper in a Kentucky soybean field. If you'd like to see that photo and more, hit the link from the Chicago Tribune. The farmer, the landowner, David Alexander, said losing some of his soybeans was worth the excitement. Defense event in Valley points up readiness. This from Arizona Republic. The arm of the U.S. government that's responsible for knocking off threats to the country gets together in Phoenix this week to talk about topics such as natural resources and sustainability. Those don't sound like military normal projects. Those sound like land wars and resource wars and water wars. Airlines to require more passenger data. That's from the Wall Street Journal. The Jerusalem Post notes that the IDF is training with U.S. and Turkish militaries in the exercise dubbed Reliant Mermaid X, or possibly 10. The three navies rehearsing naval rescue missions and working to improve their level of coordination. From the Soldier of Fortune magazine, service members trained to respond to domestic emergencies. This is about U.S. Army North's Task Force 51 arriving at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas for Vibrant Response. Of course, where they're practicing what would happen if a 10-kiloton nuke would go off in the heartland of America like that TV show Jericho. Biometrics to ensure parents leave with the right kids. That's from SecurityDirectorNews.com. Don't lose your kids. Know where they are with a GPS RFID tag. From dvidshub.net, dining facility keeps Vibrant Response fueled up. This is an interesting one with lots of great photos of Army guys spraying pans and turning on ovens. Again, it's all our money going to feed the drills. Government case against North Carolina jihadists falling apart. As of course it would. Daniel Patrick Boyd and the white Al-Qaeda. However, from thehill.com, very interesting, Vermont and West Virginia governors, that is Vermont Governor Jim Douglas and Governor Joe Manchin of West Virginia, both wrote a letter opposing new DOD emergency powers. We've hit this before. It came up first in the John Warner Defense Authorization Act, which basically essentially takes the power away from the governors to do what they want with National Guard, and Robert Gates can send in the military anytime he wants. So, big hat tip to West Virginia's governor. Perhaps we can get someone to maybe talk about that. Why is the National Guard recruiting for internment camps? That's from WorldNet Daily, and we mentioned the internment camps last week. They're running ads for it. And I was mentioning some of the places that were hosting the ads, like Monster.com, and I erroneously mentioned another site trying to do good work called freedomsphoenix.com. They weren't hosting the ads, they were just getting the word out. So thanks to my man Jordan in Phoenix, Arizona, for setting me straight, and thanks to Ernie Hancock and freedomsphoenix.com. So yeah, don't hesitate to write me up and say, hey, you hit that wrong, and I'll want to do it right. UK national ID card cloned in 12 minutes. That's from computerweekly.com. All cars would carry GPS to track miles under an Oregon bill by Representative Earl Blumenauer. Thank you very much. The flashback to that, we of course hit it back in December. Oregon eyes taxing vehicles per mile by satellite. And the last two bits on police state updates, Badger denial, Reliant Mermaid, and more. Outrage over Ohio police tasing an elderly Alzheimer's patient, as well as more video capturing a mom being tasered at a traffic stop. A quick one from the Chicago Tribune. CIA investigator says her reports were phony. A Detroit-area woman has pleaded guilty to falsifying her work as a CIA investigator who did background checks on employees and potential employees. Authorities say Carrie Gerdes, G-E-R-D-E-S, of Royal Oak, Illinois, lied in about 80 investigative reports from December 06 through May 07. Gerdes was supposed to interview people who knew current or potential federal employees. Her reports influenced hiring decisions and the granting of security clearances, but the interviews didn't occur. Gerdes faces up to a year in prison after pleading guilty Tuesday. Messages seeking comments were left with her lawyer, Richard Helfrich, and Assistant U.S. Attorney Joe Falvey Jr. There's no mention of a motive in court filings. U.S. Attorney Terrence Berg calls the case a betrayal of trust, something the criminals in action know a lot about. And I link right over to Carrie Gerdes' Facebook page. A couple quick notes on Brazilian corruption, killer TV hosts, and fake Christian criminals. Brazilian TV host turned politician ordered killings to boost ratings. That's from The Guardian. A Brazilian politician who fronts a popular TV crime show is being investigated for allegedly ordering a series of executions in a bid to boost his ratings. Wallace Souza, S-O-U-Z-A. The other bit of corruption out of Brazil, this from CBS News, evangelical leader and nine others charged in Brazil. The founder of one of Brazil's biggest evangelical churches siphoned off billions of dollars in donations from his mostly poor followers to buy jewelry, TV stations, and other businesses for himself. Bishop Edir Macedo and nine other people linked to the Universal Church of the Kingdom of God committed fraud, which rhymes with God, against the church itself and against its numerous followers. Surprise, surprise, church officials did not respond to attempts to reach them by phone and email. And with that, you made it. We made it through that whole episode, and thankfully you get a little bit of a punchline. I get to let you off a little easy, but again, that's why they do it so well. It doesn't hit you over the head. It's so dead on. It's just slightly tweaked. Google's new opt-out feature protects users' privacy by moving them to a remote village.
Concerned about about your privacy while using Google? The internet giant says it understands. Google is now offering users a chance to opt out and live in privacy in a remote mountain village. TechTrends reporter Jeff Tate has more.
Thanks, Teresa. They call it the opt-out village, and it's just what you'd expect from Google.
If you want to keep your information private, all you have to do is move to our 22-acre opt-out village and not speak to anyone from the outside world. It's very simple.
Just go to the Google front page, click the opt-out button, and in minutes, a van will come to your house and pick you up. That same day, a team of Google privacy experts eliminates your home address, guaranteeing it will no longer appear on Google local pages. And after just 2 days in the back of a van, you're there.
In the village, we can guarantee that there's no chance of Google reading your emails because there are no computers. And because they're also monitored and tracked by Google, there are no banks or hospitals.
Residents will be expected to know how to grow food, suture wounds, and bury corpses by hand if they plan to opt out. And Google has gone the extra mile to ensure that users who choose to opt out are given complete privacy in their new home. A 30-foot tall, 10-foot thick physical data security wall keeps all former Google users from leaving the village until they decide they want to start using Google again.
The opt-out village can't even be seen by Google satellites because the entire town is enclosed with a large metal box with no openings.
Google says those wishing to opt back into using Google after their time in the village will be allowed to do so if they agree to be branded with a whimsical G on their foreheads to label them doubters.
If you don't want to give a complete access to your most private thoughts and feelings, that's fine. You can just toil in the hinterlands and die young.
Ann Carter says the opt-out village is already getting rave reviews. One of the first village residents sent this letter praising the total privacy inside the village, saying, "All alone, no light, hard to breathe." Now that's one man whose data is secure. For the Onion News Network, I'm Jeff Tate.
Thanks, Jeff. If you have any questions about the opt-out village, type them in an email to a friend and Google will get back to you within 24 hours. And in just a minute, is your child missing out on teen sex parties?
Google opt-out protects privacy by moving users to a remote village. Which kind of sounds like the remote village that they put the savages on in Brave New World, which we mentioned at the top of the show. One quick last glance back at Google News, where again we see Manson follower Lynette Squeaky Frome released from Fort Worth Federal Prison. This getting quite the top billing this weekend. And again, we just like to watch the memes as we mine the data in the digital news barrage. So let's hit another one from the Dallas News. This from Ground Zero, if you will. Manson follower Lynette Squeaky Frome released from Fort Worth Prison. She walked out of a Fort Worth federal prison a free woman Friday, perhaps hoping to live out her life in anonymity. But it's unlikely that the woman who spent 34 years behind bars for attempting to kill President Gerald R. Ford can ever hide from her infamous connection to serial killer Charles Manson. John Verga, the attorney who defended Frome in her 1975 trial, said that would be a shame. I always thought it was a complete tragedy that this kid got caught up with someone like Charles Manson, Verga said in an interview with the Dallas Morning News. She's very bright. If you met her at a cocktail party and had a conversation with her, you'd say, "What a wonderful young woman." Citing privacy rules, Tom Hutchinson, chief of staff for the U.S. Parole Commission, declined today to reveal where Frome has indicated she will live. She has a term of parole to serve for the rest of her life unless her sentence is terminated early. She will be supervised by a probation officer who is an employee of the U.S. court system. In recent weeks, Frome turned down dozens of interview requests from the media, including one from the Dallas Morning News. Now 60 years old, Frome was known as Manson's top lieutenant when he encouraged his band of followers to go on a two-day killing spree in 1969 that claimed 8 lives, including that of actress Sharon Tate and her unborn baby. Though Frome will forever be linked to the Manson family, she did not participate in the notorious slayings 40 years ago in L.A. that put him and 5 followers in prison for life. Manson, now 74, is in the California State Prison at Corcoran. He was denied parole in 07 and will not be eligible for release again until 2012. Manson and Frome have reportedly corresponded over the years, and she remains a loyal follower, although others in his so-called clan have repudiated him. Verga said he would not be surprised if Frome tried to reunite with her 2 siblings, since she spoke of them fondly years ago. He said, He did not know her relatives' names or addresses. Fromm, whose nickname referred to the sound of her voice, was born to a stay-at-home mom and an engineering father in Santa Monica, California in 1948. She was a child star in an amateur dance troupe that performed on national television, including the Lawrence Welk, Art Linkletter, and Dinah Shore shows. The troupe visited the White House and reportedly performed for President Dwight D. Eisenhower. There's a photo of her in the dance troupe, and she's the sweetest-looking kid, Virga said. I can't fathom how this could have happened, but sometimes people acquire beliefs that we think are crazy. Fromm met Manson in 1967, the summer of love, a time when she was estranged from her parents. He eventually drew a band of followers, mostly women, who considered him a prophet of sorts. He espoused ideas about saving the earth and leading a revolution. When Manson and five of his followers were jailed for the Tate killings, Fromm and the rest of his band would gather outside the jail at night and howl in protest. After his conviction, Manson was sent to Folsom Prison, about 20 miles from Sacramento. Fromm moved to the California capital and began plotting ways to get his message out. Virga, who still practices criminal law in San Francisco, said she wanted attention. And she got it in 1975 when President Ford was walking to a state building during a visit with California leaders. That article goes on. We, of course, noted, I believe last year, that the other failed Ford assassin, Sarah Jane Moore, has been released. And as we note, the 40th anniversary beginning tomorrow, August 15th, of Woodstock. It all kind of ties together. The media and the memes, all in the news world order. Let's take a look, my friends. It's the moment you've been waiting for. Of all the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week, such as the Pepsi Cola Company, with their ISP coming from Plano, Texas. We also had United Airlines out of Chicago, Illinois, as well as the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, out of Oklahoma City. We had the DOD Network Information Center in District Heights, Maryland. They Googled Zach Limnois from MIT, this being one of the guys I think being touted as one of the cyber czar guys, and I've noticed people from the DOD Googling this guy's name. I don't think that's the first time I've mentioned Zach Limnois in a creepy customer list. So again, that's kind of why we pay attention to these, because you can kind of see what they are interested in. And again, using this stat counter and seeing who's visiting, I don't make the claim that some kind of paranoid thing that, oh my God, they're watching me. Because so many of these are just regular people at their job playing around on the internet like most people do when they're sitting at a stupid desk in a cubicle for 8 hours a day. Hopefully these folks at some of these installations and corporations are getting a nice dose of media monarchy truth. Again, the USAISC Information Services out of Fort Huachuca, Arizona. We also had the United States Department of Transportation out of Waldorf, Maryland, which again, interestingly enough, has USCG.mil as their ISP. That's the United States Coast Guard.mil. We had ExxonMobil. We had the Los Angeles County Sheriffs. We had the Department of Homeland Security out of Des Moines, Iowa, where massive terror drills are currently taking place. We also had the United States Southern Command, Southcom, out of Miami, Florida. We had private military contractor par excellence, Boeing, out of Chicago. Again, the USAISC headquarters out of Massillon, Ohio. They Googled, Bill Maher says Ron Paul is my new hero, and he did. Again, the DOD Network Information Center. Again, the Navy Network Information Center. Bouncing links back and forth to each other. Again, you can see how close they are, that basically the folks in Alexandria are looking at something on Media Monarchy, so they send it over to the other guys of the DOD Network in Santa Cruz or God knows where. The Federal Reserve Board out of Washington, D.C., the Idaho National Guard, Lockheed Martin out of Denver, the Navy Network Information Center out of Stafford, Virginia, West Virginia University out of Morgantown, the National Institutes of Health out of Rockville, Maryland, Boeing again from Chicago, Chrysler Technologies out of Waco, Texas, and finally, Colgate Palmolive Company out of Brooklyn, New York, visited MediaMonarchy.com. And so should you, and I thank you for listening yet again. Wherever you are, wherever you may be listening live or re-listening to this episode, I do it for me because I find it amazing and educational, and I hope you do the same and try and spread the word of what we're trying to get out here. I can't put it any more simply than that. So again, thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com and the Revere Radio Network, and of course, the Portland Radio Authority, for bringing me and Media Monarchy to you. August 14th, 2009, episode 136. My name's James Evan Pilato. I am your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, imploring you, my friends, to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Thought police would get him just the same.